document real life when real life's getting more like fiction each day.
From the success he's experiencing today, you'd never guess how his career actually started.
I found an ad for a local musical production of A Christmas Carol, and I called and scheduled myself an audition. I was like 7 or 8 years old.
He started as a kid, but as his career grew, so did his voice and activism.
Would you define yourself as activist?
Yeah.
Actor? You do?
Yeah, yeah. If I did have the chance to have anybody's eyes on me and ears on my what I had to say, then I wanted to try to do something to help make the world a better place.
He's been a performer in huge Broadway shows and an actor in huge TV shows and movies. Actor and singer Anthony Rapp, now on The Pulse.
You need to listen to me. There isn't any time.
Guys, welcome to another episode of The Pulse. By now, you know what we do. We get cool people. They've got great stories. We sit down and talk to them, share their experiences, and inevitably we find some sort of connection, either from childhood or TV shows or what have you. Star of stage and screen, Anthony Rapp joins us on The Pulse. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. How are you doing?
I'm great. I appreciate you coming in.
My pleasure.
We're sitting here before the show starts singing old Sesame Street song. So
yes.
That was the connection.
Yes,
it's my mic check. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. I'm singing to a Broadway star.
Yeah.
I probably shouldn't do that.
No, it's all right.
It's cool.
I have a 2-year-old and a 3-year-old, and I was singing that song too, like in the car one day when we were on a little road trip, and then I found it on Spotify and I played it for them, and they asked for it over and over and over again.
It's so a good song.
It continues. The legacy continues.
It's a catchy song. We were, when you walked in, I was telling you that myself, our director, producer, the group of people in here, and we were playing 6 Degrees of Anthony. I feel like everybody knows you from something different. Is that like it's a fair assessment?
It's probably true.
Broadway
and by the way, I was also in the original Broadway production and the film version of 6 Degrees of Separation.
Okay,
so there's that.
Then it
I
fits.
Mean, I had a small role in that, but yeah. Yeah, like, and so I play poker. I don't get to do it very often anymore because of my toddlers, but I had a friend that I would play poker with. We would sit at the table together, and then he would notice somebody recognizing me, and then as they were getting ready to ask, like, where they know me from, he would always go, "You ever see Star Wars?" I've not been in Star Wars.
Okay.
And they would go,
like, "That's why I know
him." Yeah.
Right.
It's not true. I wasn't in Star Wars. But that was before I got cast in Star Trek Discovery.
Okay.
So I'd credit him for planting the seed that I would enter the sci-fi universe.
I like it. It's cool. All the different levels of doing things. And that's got to be a cool feeling. I mean, it means a successful, sustainable career that you've done that much.
Yeah, it's cool. And and generally, if I get recognized, it happens fairly often. But generally, people are nice. They're warm, they're kind, they're grateful. Yeah. They're not like, it's not like I've always said this, I think it's really true. I would never want to be the level of famous where you can't walk down the street without being like harassed or people being like, there's wonderful actress I worked with. She was in Once Upon a Time. So she's famous in that world, right? She's not super, she's not like, everyone around the country knows her. But in that world, when she gets recognized, sometimes people like they get physical with her. There's just that thing that can happen. So I'm just grateful that it's generally like, "Oh, thank you," or "Hi, nice."
Pleasant stuff.
Yeah, pleasant.
We had two people. One of the guys from The Sopranos told us when he was here that people started stopping him in the neighborhood and being like, "That's not how you kill somebody. This is how you kill somebody." And he's like, "I'm just going to do my laundry. I'm good." And one of the guys from Insecure said that he had been slapped twice in airports for things that his character did on Insecure. Women were that upset with him.
That's bananas.
That's nuts.
No, that's not okay.
No, that's crazy. How'd you get into this? Like, you've had a long, sustainable career. What made you start?
My mom was a nurse. She was a single mother nurse. I had an older brother, older sister, and I. She got a job at a summer camp when I was 6. I went there, and I don't remember why, because I was 6. It's,
Right.
But I auditioned for the musical that summer. And I got the role of the Cowardly Lion in The Wizard of Oz. I loved it. Went back the next summer, did 2 more shows. And then when I grew up in Joliet, Illinois, outside Chicago.
Okay.
And I found an ad for a local musical production of A Christmas Carol. And I called and scheduled myself an audition. I was like 7 or 8 years old. Again, this is pre-internet. This is pre-any social media. This is pre-like reality TV. I had no idea what show business was or acting career or anything.
Yeah.
I just wanted to do it. And so I don't know where that ambition came from to call and schedule myself an audition. I really, like, I feel like I should be more ambitious now than I was when I was a kid. But anyway, I did a lot of community theater, and there were a couple directors that were just like encouraging to my mom to try to, they were like, he could probably get professional work if you wanted to try doing that. Okay. And we were like, okay. Like, there was no grand plan. It wasn't like, you know, it's not like these, you know, Major League Baseball players who were like, you know, drilling their kids in the backyard.
Right. It wasn't an acting family. No. It wasn't.
My mom was a nurse. I mean, it was just, yeah, it was just something that she was just happy to support me doing it. And I was grateful. Now I can see all these years later what, I mean, I had some inkling, but I do not know how she made it work. She made it work. She made it possible. And I auditioned for a couple of things in Chicago when I was like 9 and got them. And that, and then the rest, I just sort of one foot in front of the other and kept working, you know.
Okay. And you just loved it, so you pursued it. It wasn't like, okay, I'm going to be the biggest television or movie star, or because it's been a lot. It's TV, it's movies, it's mm-hmm. theater. Mm-hmm. You just like what? The performance side of it?
Yeah, the collaborative aspect of it, the sense of community, the feeling of connecting to material that's meaningful, the joy of getting to sing a song, like all of the above. Mm-hmm. And traveling, I got to travel from such a young age, so I have the love of getting to come to experience different places. I mean, my first time in Philly, if I remember correctly, was I did Avengers and Babysitting when I was 15. And then back then you used to do press tours. Now they just do junkets where you sit in a hotel room and talk
right,
to people.
Satellite. You
know. But back then we went to Minneapolis, Philly, Kansas City, New York, you know. And so that was part of the joy of it, was getting to have these experiences, walk down a street that I'd never walked on before. Okay. That's one of the things, that's one of the many, many, many things about being an actor that I love. The showbiz part of it turns out not so much, you know. That's the hard part. That's the part that's just sort of a drag sometimes. But the opportunity to be in rooms with people and delve into something, create something together, that's golden for all time.
And you still love it?
Love that part of it, yes.
Okay. When did you know, you started young, community theater, doing those types of things. When did you know this was a career? And not just, I'm having fun.
I mean, I guess probably by the time I did Adventures of Babysitting, that was a word that people, when we were doing the press tour, that's a word people were using. I was like, career? Like, I'm
15.
I never thought about it, but that's when I think it started to occur to me in that sense. And then I started to go, oh, well, I guess I have to do things to try to build a career. But it's still, that's never been like something I feel like I'm very good. Like, that's not my forte. Okay. I know, like, I remember seeing Madonna's first appearance on American Bandstand. So Lucky Star, that was her first single.
Right.
It had come out, it was a big hit. So she's on American Bandstand, not super famous yet. And Dick Clark is like, what do you want to do? And she said, I want to rule the world. And I watched, and this is years later that I saw it. I was like, she was right. She did do that. I've never felt that way. Like, but there are people, like, that's what they're like, I'm going to be a star. I'm going to do this. You know, good for them. I don't know what that's
like. It's not you.
I don't know. I just don't know how you do that. I don't know what it's like.
So it's really about the work, liking to perform, interacting with people, and not all the stuff that comes with
it. Yeah, and I'm grateful. Like, if the stuff means that I can, like, meet cool, amazing people and have these experiences, I'm grateful for that. And I'm aware that if, you know, being a part of something that's famous helps open up doors for other work, I'm aware that, you know, winning awards can be helpful, but it's not the end goal. It can never be the end goal. How could it ever be the end goal? Because it's like that passes. The work,
you get it,
the
then
work,
what?
Yeah, the
you're
work
like,
lives.
I got this, now I'm done.
Yeah, the people who win awards, sometimes they win an award and then they don't work for 2 years. I mean, it's such a fickle, weird business. Like, that's not the point. So, anyway.
But you've been a part of, and when we came in the room, our director was like, oh, Broadway Rent, I wonder if he'll sign my playbill. Like, know you from that. Mm-hmm. Fanatical sounds a little extreme, but that kind of audience loves that.
Yeah, sure.
Star Trek, Trekkies, they love that.
Yes.
Like, you've been a part of things where it's a really deeply, you know, kind of invested audience. Like, what's that like?
But I think what both fandoms share is it's not just like they love the, they don't just love the trappings of it. They love the soul of it. They use language to talk about it, about how much it's changed their lives, changed the way they think about their lives. It's helped them make choices about what they do with their lives. That's their level of engagement with the work itself. And it's which to me is a little different than like just being, I don't mean to denigrate being just being a fan of something that you really love and you're excited by, but it's just, it goes a little deeper. And there's also a pretty big, if you like the Venn diagram of Rent and Star Trek fans, it's pretty big. There's a lot of, you know, cross, you know, and because both works are also pretty hopeful. Ultimately, they're about community. They're about people coming together to try to rise above challenges and that trying to look for the best of us. And, you know, it's not just, you know, like disaster porn. It's like, you know, it's like coming together to try to solve problems. And I think we're all longing for that kind of sense of hope.
So you take your voice, your success, very seriously. Like, are you, I mean, and we'll talk a little bit about that. Would you define yourself as activist?
Yeah.
Actor? You do?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, and I grew up really influenced by singers, really, at the time, like in the 80s and 90s, that's when I was experiencing like Live Aid. I forget what it was called, but the like Artists Against Apartheid. There were these.
We're not going to play Sun City.
Yeah, exactly.
Going all
yeah,
the way back
yeah.
to that. Yeah.
So, like being awake to it at this sort of very, you know, this age when I was in my teens of like, oh, people who are famous and artists that I love and admire are also using their voices to try to make the world a better place, that made a really deep impression on me. Mm-hmm. So then when I had this much of a platform, and that wasn't a word that was even being used then, now it's like platform is, anyway, but that was a seed that was planted that was very important. Like if I did have the chance to have anybody's eyes on me and ears on my, what I had to say, then I wanted to try to do something to help make the world a better place, yeah.
I mean, clearly the career continues on, but taking that stance, I'm using my voice, I'm using it for good, the theme of the show, I'm gonna be an activist and take this seriously. Did that make it harder to continue along the journey?
No, it didn't make it harder, but I, you know, there may be executives in some rooms who are like, oh, we can't work with that guy because of what he said about X, Y, or Z thing. I don't know. If that's the case, it's never come to my ears and been made known to me, but it might be. And if that's the case, then what am I going to do? I can't change.
Okay with it.
Yeah, I mean,
you have to be.
I have to be. It's like once you're out public with these things, it's, you can't, I wouldn't want to retract them anyway, but you can't. They're out, right? So, yeah. I just can't imagine it being another way for myself. But I also understand why some people are a little more cautious about these things to a certain extent. I feel I have a little more understanding of it now that I have two kids, in the sense that I'm aware, like, yeah, I got to protect my family to a certain extent, you know, and especially now in the age of social media and all the other nonsense that's happening, like, if I'm sticking my neck out too far, would that possibly rain down on them?
Right.
I, that is something that is part of my awareness now that it wasn't before. But at the same time, I will always advocate for justice where I can and fairness where I can and equality where I can and all of the things that I, you know.
And that's just part of it to you.
Yeah.
You know, I was reading your bio, going through your bio, and it kind of struck me similarities to some of the other guests we've had who have talked about, we've had, you know, Native American actors who said that they then carry the torch for a whole group of people. We've had, you know, Shirley Ralph and people who were kind of trailblazing in the African American community, and we have to now, whether or not you want it, people kind of put it on your shoulder.
Yeah.
In reading your bio, it's hard to believe that one of the articles labeled you the first openly gay Broadway performer. and I don't mean that in a disrespectful
way. Yeah, no,
way.
But I don't think, like, it, I don't think it can be can't be totally accurate, but it was certainly one of the very few.
Okay.
Even at the time, believe it or not, like as you know, gay friendly as theater has been in so many ways over the years, and certainly in content that was being produced much before TV and film had content.
Okay.
There still weren't that many people who were like really that out and really that open. And some of them weren't at the time that they, like, B.D. Wong wasn't out when he won the Tony for M. Butterfly, but then he came out years later, right? Okay. Nathan Lane wasn't out when he won his Tony for Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum, but then he came out later. So it's broadened over the years, but at the time, and it, you know, it was sort of like the open secret in the community. Like, it was just people weren't fully going there to like, be open about it in public, but they weren't necessarily closeted in the workplace. So it was that line.
But once you were, and once it was out there and open, did it the same responsibility I was talking about? It all of a sudden, were you now championing a cause or opening doors, whether or not it was something you wanted to do?
Well, I did want to open doors, though. That's the thing. And because I was fairly young, I was in my early 20s, one of the main reasons I wanted to be that source of whatever I could be, you know, on this scale. Again, it was like people who were paying attention, but there's still lots of people who weren't necessarily paying attention, right. But people were, it was really for young people. Like the it's gotten so much better for young people in so many ways who are working through their identities, you know, especially depending on where they live. Certain places it's still not great, but in other places it's like there's so much more acceptance, especially among their own generation. There's so much more structure of support within schools, within communities. So that's great. But like at the time in the early 90s, that was still, you know, it was pretty dire for a lot of young people who were trying to figure themselves out, and especially in small towns. So that was one of my biggest hopes, that whatever I could do as a young person myself, relatively young person myself, to help shine a light and give them someone to look toward for them, for their own sake, to know that they don't have to necessarily be afraid of who they are. That was the real initial impetus. And then, you know, now as I've gotten older, that's still the case, but, you know, now, especially having a family through surrogacy, like that's another area of like just of advocating for family equality, family recognition. There's just so many areas.
I feel like your advocacy in terms of opening doors, you know, having to kick open doors is never funny. I don't mean it that way. But when I'm talking about first openly gay on Broadway, and you kind of go, okay. Mm-hmm. Then first openly gay in the future, like on Star Trek. I'm sitting there like, so they got spaceships and can go all over the world, but have never had an openly gay. That just seemed odd.
I know.
But I guess it's still, you know, like a battle that you had to kind of fight.
And, you know, we've gotten to know the fantastic people who are part of the Star Trek legacy before us. And, you know, back in Next Generation, which was in the 90s, those actors were agitating for these storylines, for these characters. And they were just met with stonewalling from the network and from the studio. And, you know, they were afraid. All the bean counters and the powers that be were afraid. And so, yeah, it was fun. It took a long time, you know, and in the Star Trek community, there is a really big LGBT fan presence. Mm-hmm. And they were like waiting and waiting and waiting for 50 plus years. And then finally we got to do it. Wilson Cruz, who's also an activist, you know, myself, and we'd been friends for 20 something years, and we got to do this together. That was really cool.
That is. It's still. But even when you hear it, you're like, I'm in space.
Mm-hmm. You
know? And this is the first.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. So you're kind of traveling. You're doing one-man shows. Mm-hmm. You did one, by the time this airs, you did one in Philadelphia. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Tell us about the show.
This is a concert. I've done a show that's a more of a theatrical piece also. That's like, you know, real storytelling, really like, you know, that uses music to tell the story. This is more like, this is a collection of songs that I love to sing. Some of them from shows that I've done, some of them shows I haven't done, some of them from rock and roll and pop stuff that I grew up listening to. It's a real grab bag of just music that has touched me. And one of my favorite things to do as an audience member is to go to see concerts, go to see singers. And as I mentioned before, like singers have been heroes to me and source of huge inspiration. So it's my way of trying to give back some of what I've gotten over the years. Yeah. And I'm just grateful for the opportunity to do that kind of thing. Because I love getting a script and playing a character, but doing concerts is kind of like I get to be myself, and which is its own kind of cool thing. And I have wonderful musicians that I've been working with off and on for many years, So to get, you know, it's that collaborative thing. Every night is a little different because the audience is a little different. So it's just one of those, it's one of those ways I get to sustain my creative soul and try to give back and try to sell, you know, shine a light on some artists maybe the people haven't heard of. Also sing things that people really do know really well. It's like a, it's a combination of all of it.
And people can see it. It's kind of moving around the country.
Yeah, we've been doing like City Winery is the most recent version. Like we've done, we're doing a bunch of City Winery, which is really nice that they're giving me this chance. And then, and I do these concerts also with Adam Pascal, who's one of the original members of the cast of Rent with me. He played Roger originally. We do concerts together, you know, so it's, yeah, it's, and we, yeah, we kind of sprinkle them through the year, different places, you know, whenever we can. Yeah.
So tell us what's next. Couple more questions. What's next? You have a lot going on in your career. You're doing the tour, you're doing the shows, you're doing the movies, you're doing Broadway. What are we looking for next?
There's a really wonderful play I did a developmental workshop of a little over a year ago that we're going to get to do an off-Broadway production of in the spring. It hasn't been announced yet, so I can't really say much more, but I'm very excited about it because it's a really special play. And it's a one-man, it's a one-man play. It wasn't written for me, but I got to do this workshop and it was very meaningful, and I think it has a chance to make an impact. It's a very special play about, you know, a lot of things that we've been dealing with as a culture over the last several years, and this writer found a way to do that in a way that really penetrates. So I'm looking forward to that. That'll be in New York.
Okay.
In a kind of site-specific little venue, which I think will be its own kind of cool thing.
Yeah, and you smile, like you can tell that that's the kind of stuff you're still really enjoying.
Yeah.
Last two, the show's theme is how you use your voice for good, and that's in kind of two steps. You described yourself as an activist.
Yeah.
What should we be paying attention to that you are advocating for, want to make people aware of?
Well, I mean, allyship right now, I think, is one of the biggest things that we all can do, especially those of us who are living in safer spaces, in cities and states that have a little more protection happening, because protections and rights and freedoms are being stripped away all over the place, especially for our trans and non-binary members of our society. So whatever we can do to help support the local grassroots organizations in some of these states, because federal money is being stripped away, government money is being stripped away in those states especially, so there are still going to have to be services provided to these folks who are living there, because it's not so easy to just pick up and leave and go places where they need help, where they can get the help. So I would encourage people to put on your big ally hat and try to find where can I make a difference, where can I make an impact, because it's going to be like, you know, person to person in a way sometimes, because these agencies, some entire agencies are folding or being just completely dismantled right now. Okay. So I that's one of the areas I think that we really need to look out for each other.
One of the many. And follow you on social. We can stay up to speed with all the things that you're doing.
Sure.
And then finally, we end every episode of The Pulse. As I said, the theme is use your voice for good. I ask everybody, that's the final question. What does use your voice for good mean to you?
Well, I think it means speaking up and speaking out when you see injustice. I think it means lending a hand where you can. And I think it means doing, you know, taking stock of what you're doing in your life, whether or not it really connects to your values. And are there things that you can do that might be able to shift the needle? Because if we all shift the needle this much, that starts to get really exponential, and then we can make a real difference.
Stage, screen, performances, you got a book, memoirs, all the things. Anthony Rapp, thank you for spending some time with us on The Pulse.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate you. Guys, thanks so much for listening to The Pulse with Bill Anderson podcast. Today with singer, performer, he's been on Broadway, multiple movies and TV shows, Anthony Rapp. And one of the things I left out in that description is his activism and how much he cares about making a real difference in society. That's the theme of this show. And it was pretty cool to hear how it inspired him throughout his career. Do me a favor. I always ask you to hit like, subscribe, follow, whatever it is on your screen, so you get a notification every week when another episode of The Pulse comes out. You can download the Fox Local app. What are we up to? 150 some odd episodes. You should go check them out. They're all right there at your fingertips on demand. And follow me on social media at BillAFox29. Once again, thank you for listening. And I leave you today, as I always do, reminding you whenever you can, use your voice for good and have a good one.